Good Wednesday evening. Welcome to the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at eEnglish34. I'm on Twitter at eEnglish34. Follow me on there. Got a few newsworthy topics to discuss today in both the cybersecurity and cryptocurrency world. So we're going to get to those. I think since yesterday I started with cybersecurity, today I should probably start. I'm sorry, yesterday I started with, cyber. I'll start with crypto today. Change it up a little bit. So, some interesting stuff in crypto that I saw today. I saw more articles about Ethereum still tanking and the gloomy outlook that everybody has for it. Today was even bigger sell-off day for Ethereum. So a whole bunch of short sells were going on for Ethereum, and just record high sell-offs for Ethereum. So it's a shame that this is happening, but not much you can do. But when it starts tanking like this, it seems like everybody just starts bailing, and rightfully so. You want to cut your losses and move on to something else. It's just sad. But I did post an updated article on Ethereum sell-offs from CoinDesk, so you can see what they had to say about it. But basically, it's just a whole bunch of short sells, people just trying to get rid of it. But you never know what'll happen moving forward. So if you're a big Ethereum fan, keep your head up. What that means, though, any other coin or token that's built on the Ethereum platform is also very likely tanking as well. The biggest contributor to that has been ICOs, at least according to some cryptocurrency analysts and researchers. But, you know, once they start selling off, people have their stop losses set in the exchanges. And once it gets below a certain price, their stop losses trigger and it just keeps selling and selling and selling until it gets down to barely anything. It was trading pretty low today. Yesterday it was about 179, I want to say. So that was bad. But today it's at 181. So I guess, you know, it went up a couple bucks, but really still nowhere near where it was a year ago. So it's sad to see the Ethereum platform just kind of tanking like that. But there's nothing really anybody can do but just kind of watch and hang on for the ride. If you want to cut your losses, now's the time. Some people are still just holding on, and I understand that, too. It's your choice. Personally, I've sold all mine, but that's my opinion. Some other crypto news. Binance, the big exchange, one of the biggest exchanges in volume, they are partnering with Malta, the country Malta, to launch their own security token trading platform. I thought that was kind of cool. Binance is getting into all kinds of interesting things. They've really been making some waves here lately, but they're one of the biggest players in the crypto exchange game, so I'm not surprised. They've got a lot of weight to throw around, and they can make a lot of things happen if they want to. So they're partnering up with Malta to create that security token trading platform. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there. They're obviously in the very, very, very beginning stages of that, but still pretty cool to see that even the exchanges are trying to help build the cryptocurrency market and try to build the space even bigger and help with the adoption of blockchain just across the board. So that's cool. Good stuff there. In other news, as everybody knows, Ethereum's tanking, but Litecoin is following suit. You know, in years past, Litecoin and Ethereum would follow right along with Bitcoin as far as price fluctuations go. And they still do, but they don't bounce back nearly as well as Bitcoin has so far. Litecoin is way down. It was down to about 50 bucks per coin. At its peak, I think it was around 180 last year, I want to say. Maybe even up to 200. But their failed attempt at LitePay really, really hurt their stock. They never did say why that failed. They just all of a sudden stopped doing it and just completely fell off the face of the map. So LitePay was gone. They had a bunch of people that were really digging LitePay, but all of a sudden they just put on the brakes and said, nope, we're not going to do LitePay anymore. Sorry. But when they were going through the announcement of that and showing everybody what they were going to do with LitePay, the value of the coin was going way, way up, but it's just tanking now. Just tanking. Right along with Ethereum. It's looking pretty ugly. Bitcoin's holding steady, though. We're holding steady at about 6,400. It's kind of bouncing around between the two. So that's good to see. There is a steady coin out there. But of course, it's the big daddy of them all, Bitcoin. So, but Litecoin's at a 12-month low. Ethereum's definitely at a 12-month low. And it's just not looking good for either one of those guys. I'm not sure, you know, at this point, there's so many other cryptos out there. It makes me wonder, what is Litecoin going to do to build back up to where they were? What can they do, you know? I mean, what's next on their path to success? Or are they already just tanking so much that they can't come out of it? There's so many contenders now in this payment processing game and just cross-border payments and all. Basically every crypto could be a form of payment if it wanted to be. Some are used for other things, but primarily most of the new cryptos that are created are to exchange some sort of funds. So it's just sad to see that Litecoin is just tanking so bad, but it makes you wonder, what are they going to do? How are they going to compete? Or are they going to compete? Or will they just kind of fizzle and die out? You just never know. But anybody that was holding Litecoin, I'm sorry. They were on quite a run last year, but so was everything, unfortunately. And this year, it's polar opposites. There has been some positive speculation still from quite a few cryptocurrency bigwigs saying that they still think crypto, the Bitcoin at least, will hit, you know, between 10 and 15,000 this year, and not to worry about these downtrends in the market. So obviously it's all still yet to be seen, but certainly good to see that people are still positive about it. But really what drives it is the adoption of Bitcoin. That's what brings the value up for not only Bitcoin, but all of the other cryptos out there. So, anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens come year end. It'll be interesting to see what happens when Ethereum does their big code upgrade in October. Really looking forward to those couple items. But the more people that get into Bitcoin, the bigger and the higher the value of Bitcoin will be, and it'll just help the entire market. Everything essentially is traded for Bitcoin on the exchanges. Some exchanges now, like Bittrex, they released some news over the last few days that they're accepting more US dollar trading pairs. I couldn't name them off the top of my head, but they're adding to their US dollar trading pairs list quite a bit. And I dug into the Bittrex accepting US dollars and all that kind of stuff. And I looked to see how you can transfer your money to them. And you have to do a wire transfer. I'm not a fan of that at all. I mean, in this day and age, why can't we just tie it to my checking account? I understand that they don't want to do it with a credit card. But a wire transfer still? I mean, this is 2018, right? I mean, wire transfer? I don't know. Maybe they're just making fun of our current system and mocking it by telling people, oh, no, you can't pay us with anything but a wire transfer. This is why blockchain is so much better. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny that you have to send them a wire transfer to put any kind of US dollars into their system. I think Coinbase has still got the market cornered on that pretty well, but anyway, wire transfers to Bittrex if you want to fund your US dollars for trading. I'm not a fan of wire transfers at all, nor do I ever really want to do one. But that's how you do it if you want to work with Bittrex with US dollar trading pairs. And a lot of people do, and that's fine. I'm hoping that down the road, they add more support for just pulling it straight out of your checking account, or, you know, being able to use a debit card at least. I mean, something, not a wire transfer. Come on. Anyway, so we're going to jump over to cybersecurity news. There's been some pretty interesting developments in the British Airways hack. They figured out the group that did it. It's the Magecart group. I hope I'm saying that right. Magecart group is the hacking group that is responsible for that British Airways hack. It was really interesting to see what they were doing. They were doing e-card skimmers, essentially, where they inject code into a website, and with that code, it skims card numbers and whatnot that are run through that site. So British Airways was susceptible to this code injection technique, and these hackers were able to make off with 300,000 credit cards. Pretty crazy to think about e-skimmers. You know, everybody knows about the gas pump skimmers, but e-skimmers, wow. Brilliant idea if you're a hacker, but scary for the rest of us that have to worry about their money being stolen. But as I've said, don't ever use your debit card. Please don't ever use your debit card. But they were using e-skimmers, similar to Ticketmaster. So if you have a front-facing website that does any kind of transaction processing, you need to make sure you get some sort of testing done to make sure you can't get this same sort of code injection technique that they were using for these e-skimmers. So if you have a website that does that, check it. Have a professional test it. Make sure that you're not vulnerable to these code injections. Because that's scary stuff. You don't want to be like British Airways. Our friends over at Proofpoint, they released a write-up today about email attacks and how they are on the rise, basically in every sector in business. Email attacks have gone way up in every single sector. And this is, I mean, to me, it's kind of duh because I'm in the industry and I see it happening to me. So I actually see it real time, but Q3 and Q2 are basically what they're saying, that the attacks have just gone through the roof in those two quarters this year. And they're trying all kinds of new tactics, but primarily they're targeting executives. Now, you can all kind of imagine why. The executives run the show. And if an employee gets an email from what looks to be an executive, they're going to jump to it and do whatever they got to do to make that executive happy, right? They're not going to question it in most cases. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll spoof the display name and make it look like it's coming from the CEO or the CFO, and they'll be requesting a wire transfer, all kinds of crazy stuff. We had an account takeover happen on Monday at my job, a business email compromise, and they did the exact same thing. They tried to, it was interesting. They purchased a domain with similarly spelled to ours, and they purchased it that morning to create this fake email chain. And if you weren't looking really, really closely, you wouldn't have noticed that the email domain was misspelled. But they bought this domain, set up these email accounts. They already had access to this one person's email, so they were able to grab email signatures from that person's inbox and sent items. Who knows how long they'd been watching. We're still trying to investigate that and figure out how long they were in her inbox and in her mailbox and what else they got to. But nonetheless, they grabbed all the email signatures that they needed to make it look legitimate. And they sent these emails back and forth saying to create this new account for this new partner. And we're going to transfer this much in funds, and it's going to be a wire transfer. And then they sent it to somebody. They used the person's legitimate email address to send to one of our internal employees, saying, okay, so-and-so approved this. I need you to go ahead and execute it, basically. We caught it on our end, and I was able to run over there within minutes of seeing this email come through and tell them to stop and delete the emails and prevent anything from happening. But that's just an example of some of the stuff these guys are willing to do. Oftentimes when they've hacked into an account, they don't necessarily get into it right away. They may just sit there and lurk and watch. And if they can understand enough about the business process and what the business is doing and how they make payments and all kinds of things like that, then they create their targeted campaign where they go and buy a domain that looks just like yours and it's spelled very similarly. And they'll create this email chain that looks legit, send it to one of your internal people, and make it look like it's coming from the CFO, and try to trick people that way. So it's definitely on the rise this year. I've seen all kinds of different tactics. That's just one example, a very recent tactic that's been happening. Today we got hit with all kinds of different malware attachments, probably several hundred today. That's the most I've seen in one day. We usually get several hundred over the course of a week or two, but several hundred in one day to a very specific group of individuals that they were trying to target. And most of them were executives or managers or people in finance or accounting and things like that. They're trying to get in to where the payments are going in and out so that they can get some money. They want to steal it. They want to get a fake wire transfer going. So, it's crazy what they'll do, but it is definitely on the rise. So, I am not surprised at all hearing that Proofpoint came out with this article and seeing it real time. It's pretty obvious. But, anyway, if you want to read that article, I'll post it in the show notes for you. It's pretty interesting stuff, but essentially, email is still the biggest threat vector, so make sure you've got a good spam filter. And it's so imperative that you train your employees to train them over and over and over. Always, always, always train them on these phishing emails. Do simulated phishing attacks. Because it happens constantly. And spam filters are never going to be perfect. They're always going to find another way through. And it only takes one to get through and fool one person. Just fool the right person. So, be careful out there with those emails. Maybe one day we'll have a different and better platform for communicating between businesses. But for right now, we're still using email. Unfortunately, but that's just the way it goes. Email's been around forever. Nobody wants to change, and I get it. In other news, I saw this article. I thought it was just kind of an interesting thing to think about. With all the smart home technology and all these smart thermostats that people are using now, the large-scale types of attacks that somebody could do with all this smart home stuff, and we've already been seeing that with DDoS attacks, smart home devices doing DDoS attacks and whatnot, but I'm specifically talking about thermostats. So creating a... I don't know what you want to call it, but creating a summer in your house in millions of homes that have these smart thermostats, being able to control them and create havoc by forcing it to, you know, crank up the heat in the middle of the summertime, for example. So you could basically create a heat wave or even a blizzard, maybe. I don't think it would go quite that far, but create a blizzard by cranking everybody's air conditioning up to full blast. And you know, if you controlled all of that, I guess it's possible that could happen, right? If you controlled every single thermostat, or let's say you controlled a few million thermostats, that'd be interesting. As long as they're all in the same, you know, little area, you could certainly try to create a blizzard. I don't think it would work, but it would certainly piss a lot of people off if you made it really, really hot and it's already summertime, especially here in Texas where I am. Man, that would suck. It's already 110 outside. I don't need another, 100 degrees in my house either. So it's just kind of interesting to think about the different types of attacks that could happen with all this smart home stuff, especially since it's controlling, you know, climate control systems and it's controlling your sprinkler systems. You know, they could create mass flooding if they knew that a particular neighborhood, for example, all had smart sprinkler systems, for example. And they could essentially just crank everybody's sprinklers on full blast, and everybody in the whole neighborhood has their sprinkler running. There's wasting water, creating flooding, and all kinds of other crazy stuff. I mean, it's just, it's scary to think about, yet people put all this stuff in their house not really thinking about the ramifications. A smart sprinkler, I don't understand why we need that, really, but it's a thing. It's a real thing. The manual sprinkler, I mean, it's on a timer. It works. It's got a rain sensor. I mean, it does work. So I'm curious to see where the IoT industry goes security-wise moving forward and how they plan on keeping these IoT devices patched and updated. Because every time we turn around, somebody's found some other exploit, some other flaw, or they've taken over thousands of whatever device because it was unsecured. It happens all the freaking time. What are we going to do? How do we stop this? And it's only really going to be stopped by the manufacturers. They have to create or try to create the most secure IoT devices that they possibly can. And not jeopardize the security of everybody, essentially. If you can hack into an IoT device and then bridge into somebody's network, that's a huge vulnerability. So if you have any kind of smart home tech or smart office tech, any kind of smart IoT stuff at your office, it needs to be on a completely segmented network. If you don't already know that, segment it off. Don't allow any of that stuff to touch your internal network at all. Make sure that it's physically segmented on its own internet connection. This is for businesses I'm talking. Now, at home, it's a little more difficult. You may not have that capability with your router or whatever, but try to segment it off as best you can. Try to keep it on its own network if you can. Flash your router with DDWRT, and then you definitely can. Then you can set up some VLANs. I've certainly done that before. But try to segment that off. Put it on its own, you know, SSID, on its own wireless network that's somehow segmented from your primary home network, whatever it is. Just try to block those off from everything else, because that's an easy gateway into your house. Easy gateway. And if you ever get smart home tech that says it needs, you have to open up a port on your firewall, don't ever do it. And I mean that wholeheartedly. Don't ever open up that port on the firewall, because you're just allowing a hacker to get in. Once they know this device is vulnerable, they can go out there and scan the internet for these, you know, these ports that are known to be used by this particular device. They can scan it for a device signature. Once they find a few hits, they can start running those exploits. Before you know it, they've got access to your smart device and the rest of your internal network. It's freaky to think about, so don't ever open up a port on the firewall if your smart home stuff tells you to. Don't ever do it. Most of it nowadays communicates outbound. It's not really communicating inbound for that much, and if it is, it's coming over port 443 or HTTPS, so I guess that's good. But if it tells you to use a specific port and open it up on the internet, not a good idea at all. So get a different IoT device if you have one that's wanting you to open up those ports. Anyway, that's all I really had for today. I want to appreciate everybody for listening to the show. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at eEnglish34 on Twitter, at eEnglish34. Check me out there or retweet a bunch of the articles we talk about on the show. All right, y'all. Thanks. Talk again tomorrow.